Welcome to the Government Services Chapter of the American College of Emergency Physicians podcast. GSASEP represents emergency physicians who work in the federal government, including active duty military, National Guard, and military reserves, as well as the Veterans Administration, Indian Health Service, and other federal agencies. Our mission is advancing emergency care for America's heroes. In this podcast, we bring you lectures and conversations with leaders in federal emergency medicine to help you better care for your patients and lead your departments. The views expressed on this podcast are personal views and do not represent the views of the Department of Defense, any branch of the military, or the federal government, and they do not constitute endorsement of any product by any of these entities.
And last but certainly not least, we're fortunate to have Dr. Tori McGowan's Leadership Toolbox Lecture. You may recognize her voice. She is also the voice of the podcast at the beginning and end of each episode. So take it away, Tori.
Thank you all for joining me today. My name is Lieutenant Colonel Tori McGowan, and I am currently the commander of the Oregon Sea Birdie Enhanced Response Force Package, or SERF-P, in the Oregon Air National Guard. I also just came off 2 months of activation, being the officer in charge for two of the largest vaccine sites in the state of Oregon. So I'll bring some of those perspectives in here today as well. As we get going, please know that these are my opinions and do not reflect the opinions of the United States Air Force or the Oregon Air National Guard. Also know I have no relevant financial disclosures. So this was me in 2010. I was 18 months out of residency and I arrived in Balad, Iraq at the Air Force Theater Hospital. And they said, congratulations, you're the medical director. You are the most senior emergency physician we have. I felt completely unprepared for that and really didn't have any skills or tools in how to be a leader. I put this lecture together so that when that happens to you, when you are put into that leadership position that you feel like you're not ready for, that you have some skills and some tools that you can fall back on so that you can be successful. As we go through today, we're going to talk about a five-step model that will allow you to apply it to any leadership situation, whether that's leadership on a large enterprise or leadership on a one-on-one level. We're going to talk about how to give negative feedback and how to issue consequences. It's one of the toughest things that we have to do, and doing it well is really important as a commander. And then finally, we're going to touch very briefly on meetings, because everybody hates meetings. Let's make yours a little bit more successful. Before we get deep into the weeds, though, there are a couple of things that I'd like you to think about going forward. First of all, I want you to think about the mindset of a leader. So in the military, you get put into a leadership position because you're a really good doc, right? You do really good on patient care, and then somewhere along the way, we elevate you to a medical director or a flight commander or the equivalent in the other services. But the skills that got you selected, being a really good doctor, are not the skills that you need as a leader. So reframing your mind about how do I approach this problem? And most of us, when we get stressed or we have a situation, we want to really lean in and really doctor well, because that's what we do well. That is an entirely different set of skills that you need, and you're going to start building those here today. So the first thing that I want you to put into your toolkit is your leader's mindset. Now, when I started this lecture, I told you about why it's important to me, why I took hours of my life to write this for you and to bring it to you. I didn't like that feeling. And so I wanted to share with you my why as to why I brought this lecture to you. What is your why? Why does it matter to you to lead the people that you're leading?
This little idea explains why some organizations and some leaders are able to inspire where others aren't. Let me define the terms really quickly. Every single person, every single organization on the planet knows what they do, 100%. Some know how they do it, whether you call it your differentiating value proposition or your proprietary process or your USP. But very, very few people or organizations know why they do what they do. And by why, I don't mean to make a profit. That's a result. It's always a result. By why, I mean, what's your purpose? What's your cause? What's your belief? Why does your organization exist? Well, as a result, the way we think, the way we act, the way we communicate is from the outside in. It's obvious. We go from the clearest thing to the fuzziest thing. But the inspired leaders and the inspired organizations, regardless of their size, regardless of their industry, all think, act, and communicate from the inside out.
That is an excerpt of a TED Talk by a guy named Simon Sinek. And I think that it is absolutely brilliant. I love it. I encourage you to go watch that entire TED Talk. And even more, I encourage you to read this book, Start With Why. If you don't understand why you are there, if you don't understand what is important to you, how do you communicate that to the people that you work with? And how do they buy into the bigger vision of what we are supposed to do here? Now, for most of us as medical professionals, it's pretty easy. We say, meh, it's patient care. But what about that? Do you want to just do meh patient care, or do you want to do excellent patient care? Why are you here, and share that vision with others? Start With Why is an excellent book that will help you learn how to communicate the way that great communicators do so that you can drive that buy-in and that excellence from the team that you're working with. So the second thing that I'm going to put in your toolkit is your why. And this first book that goes on your commander's bookshelf is Start With Why. Another thing that can be really helpful for you is some insight into your own personality. So I just finished Air War College, and this was one of the things that we had to do as a leadership exercise, which was take a personality test. It was actually very insightful because I learned some things about myself, and I also learned about how my personality can interact with other personalities and how to overcome those different types of interactions. 16personalities.com is a free website where you can do that. I encourage you, go out there and see what you think of that test and see if it gives you any type of insight into your own mind. That's going in your toolkit as well. Now, let's shift gears a little bit and let's talk about that leadership model. It's easy. It's 5 steps. You remember, if you've ever watched Corey Slovis talk, I love this because he will tell you that there are 5 reasons, 5 things. This is 5 steps to leadership. And this is what it looks like. Expectations, skills, feedback, consequences, and growth. Those 5 steps I first learned back in these days. So this is my graduation photo from the Air Force Academy with 4 of my very best friends. This is the leadership model that we were taught at the Air Force Academy. And the Academy is an odd school because we teach very specifically about leadership. There aren't very many colleges that have these kind of conversations, right? This particular college focused a lot about it, and this is the model that they taught us. And I have found it incredibly helpful over the last 2 decades to address every type of leadership problem. So let's go through it one by one. First thing that you have to start out with is expectations. This is why it's really important to have your why, because if you don't know why you're there, how is everyone else going to? I have stolen my why from Air Force Colonel retired Scott Vandehoff. Many of you who have worked with Colonel Vandehoff will recognize these 3 rules. Take care of patients, take care of each other, and don't do anything to screw up number 1 or number 2. I've been able to apply that to every single leadership position that I've been in, and people understand that. They embrace that, and they get what I mean when I say that. Big corporations have mission statements. The Air Force has a mission statement. Every service does. Here's an opportunity, though. When you take command, give the commander's intent briefing. Has anybody ever had one of those? I gave one when I took command of the SERFP, and I had so many people come up to me and tell me thank you for that briefing. Now, I'd already been in the unit for 2 years, so everybody knew me, but this was my opportunity to stand up and say, these are the things that are important to me as a leader, and these are the things that I want you to focus on. If you do these things, we will be successful as a unit, and this is how you get ahead. Why is that so hard to communicate? Why should that be so unusual for people to have? I really encourage you, especially in a command position, have a commander's intent briefing and make that very clear. One of the things that I made very clear was diversity and inclusion is important to me. One of my members came up to me, it's been about 2 years since I took command, and she said one of the reasons she was willing to come back into the unit was because I set the expectation that everyone would be valued and respected. And that changed the culture of the unit that I was in command of. How awesome is that? Commander's calls are a great opportunity to reinforce this. So this is something that I have learned in my leadership journey. I set that expectation great when I started out, but then I forgot to keep repeating it. One of the reasons that I still remember those three things from Colonel Vanderhoff is he said them all the time. And so now in every commander's call, my mission of professional airmen ready to respond to an all hazards environment is on every single commander's call, because that is my why for my SERFP unit. You can do this for individuals as well. So when you are giving individual feedback or you're setting expectations for the junior people in your organization, they deserve to understand what success looks like. I expect you to finish your PME. I expect you to turn in your OPRs and EPRs on time. It seems silly because maybe we assume that should be how it is, but setting those expectations is important. And we'll talk about why later on in the model. Remember, as you're setting goals, they should be SMART goals. This, again, will be very important because if you don't set SMART goals, it's very hard to hold people accountable. So, little story here. When I took command of the SERFP, we were in the field. And my first drill back in the office, my senior enlisted came to me and he said, "Colonel, we had another alcohol incident while we were in the field." And I said, "Whoa, whoa, what do you mean another?" And he told me, "Yeah, this guy, he's been a perpetual problem. We think he's got an alcohol problem. He's gotten written up a couple of times, and he did it again." So I said, "Okay, well, let me look into this." So I pulled out all of the old written counseling that he'd gotten, and every single counseling that he'd gotten said things like, "You got drunk. You shouldn't do that. Don't do it again. You've been counseled. Shame on you. You are reprimanded." But I didn't have anything in there. It talked about his behavior, but nothing that set clear expectations for what the future looked like to be successful. I had the power at that point to kick him out of the military. I didn't feel like I could, because I didn't feel like my previous commanders had set clear expectations, had set SMART goals, so that he understood what being successful looked like. So I called him into the office one more time, and I said, "You will not consume alcohol while you are on military orders." Now, that's pretty easy in the Guard because you're only on orders for a couple of days. "You will not consume alcohol while you are on orders. You will not be alone during our field exercises. And you will always have a working cell phone with you to be able to connect with you. If you do not meet these expectations, you will be removed from the service." And then I gave him a chance to ask questions. That gave me really good parameters to know if he was successful, and he would know if he was unsuccessful. Setting expectations is a really important topic. And so I really like this book, It's Your Ship by Captain Abershoff. He took one of the worst performing ships in the Navy and turned it around. And this is his story about leadership. I'm going to put that one on your commander's bookshelf as well. And by the way, this commander's bookshelf that I talk about, if you don't have an actual bookshelf with books that you can pick up and you can loan out when people are struggling, I highly suggest that you do. This has been one of my best leadership tools. Let's talk about skills, second step of the model. So we understand skills, right? First of all, you have to tell people, "I expect you to achieve an 85% on your board exam." Okay, what do we do for that? We get into the books, we do simulations, we practice, we do exercises. We also need to know what validation of that looks like. So how do we know when those skills are successful that we have met the goal that we need to do? As a commander, skills and tools to be able to do your job, that's literally what we do. Equip, train, and make sure we have personnel, right? Does that sound familiar? This is our job, to give people the ability to build those skills so that they can do their job well. It's not to do the job. It's to build those skills so that they have those available to them. Now, we talked about, you're learning a new skill right now. You're learning a leadership skill, which is totally different than your doctory skills. Remember that this takes time and takes practice. This is another great book that I really leaned on a lot during my leadership journey. It talks about one of the terms that he uses a lot in this extreme ownership is the dichotomy of leadership. Because it is really easy to, especially if you are leading docs, it's really easy to get in there and micromanage them. But that's not what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to empower them and make them better. So how do you balance empowerment and micromanaging and letting go too much and not being enough involved? This is a great book to start to learn how to define those barriers for yourself. So that one's going to go onto your commander's bookshelf as well. Feedback is one of the hardest things that we do because we don't like it. It feels awkward to call somebody in. One of the most important things is timely feedback. So as you see this guy, his feedback was not timely. This is your opportunity to enforce your expectations and to make sure that they have the skills. So on my recent vaccine activation, I had a gentleman that kept showing up late and he kept leaving his computer unlocked, which was allowing patient information to be available for compromise. And so interestingly, he showed up again late. We'd already planned on serving him paperwork and having this conversation, but he showed up again late. So we immediately pulled him in and used that as a teachable moment. The first thing that I told him was, my expectation is you are ready to go at 8 a.m. to start doing vaccines. Reinforce the expectation. Tie it to the goal. If you are not here, our team cannot start operations and we cannot get through the vaccinations that we need to do today. And my ultimate goal is to take care of those patients. Remember, I told you that at the first. Then I asked him about his skills. Do you understand the expectations and do you have any problems meeting that? This creates a dialogue. It shouldn't always be a monologue. This is his opportunity to say, my daughter needs to be dropped off at 7:45 and I can't have her there any earlier and I can't get here until 8:05. That allows you to be a commander that cares very much about your people and allows them to express the problems that they're having meeting those expectations so that you understand that they're attainable. Remember that A in that SMART goal is attainable. This type of dialogue will serve you so well with your troops because you will learn about them, you will learn about what's not working, and it will also help them realize that there isn't a reason that this isn't being done. This is why those SMART goals are so important. You are expected to be here ready to start operations at 8 a.m. There is nothing ambiguous about that. Be in your place, be ready to go. And this will help you give that feedback. It doesn't make it any easier or any less awkward, but it gives you a framework. Instead of just yelling at people, shame on you, you got drunk, you shouldn't do it again. Now you're able to give that feedback because you say, you didn't meet my expectation in this place. And we've talked about your skills to make sure that you have those and the tools that you need. This is probably the best book that I've ever read about giving negative feedback. It's called Radical Candor. And they talk, basically the entire book talks through the axes that you see here. And they are caring personally and challenging directly. For my person with the alcohol problem, his previous command had spent way too much time in manipulative insincerity. What that means is they didn't care enough about him to confront him about his alcohol use. They just kept kicking the can down the road and letting somebody else deal with it. So they didn't care about him and they wouldn't challenge him. They had expressed to me that they were concerned that he had an alcohol problem, but they'd never said to him, hey, your drinking is causing a problem. And I think that you need to see some help. Ruinous empathy is, he's just such a nice guy and I really don't want to discourage him. I'm just not going to say anything because I'm afraid for him and I don't want to make it uncomfortable. I could have gone for obnoxious aggression. So obnoxious aggression would have been to take that member and to stand him up in front of my unit and to yell at him and say, this is an example of getting drunk and being a sloppy drunk and not doing your job. How many of us have ever been stood up in front of somebody and yelled at and actually learned anything from it? Yeah, I'm guessing no hands. You rarely get good intentional learning out of that type of interaction. Where you want to be is radical candor, which is where you care very much about that person, but you're also willing to challenge them. With my alcohol incident, I called him in and I said, I think you have an alcohol problem, and I strongly encourage you to go seek treatment. Your alcohol problem is causing problems in my unit, and this is how. I expect you to change that behavior. And we'll talk about his outcome in just a minute. So that one's going on your bookshelf as well, radical candor. Consequences are an interesting beast in the military because we have a lot more power, especially as G-series commanders or as your colonels and above, much more than a normal boss does. So remember, consequences can be good. Don't forget about the good things that we can give to people. Promotions, awards, more responsibility, another job. I often undervalue how much just the colonel coming over and saying, hey, I saw you do a great job today. Thank you for continuing to do great work. Just verbal recognition of somebody's good job, especially as an officer, makes a tremendous amount of difference. So don't forget about that. Bad consequences. We're familiar with these, right? We have verbal counseling. We have written punishments, formal punishments. You don't get to go on these nice opportunities. You don't get promoted. So we're pretty familiar with that. In the military, there's actually a formal process of progressive discipline. Starts with a questioning conversation. Guy shows up at 8:30, supposed to be there at 8. It's his first time. Sergeant, tell me what happened this morning. That's the opportunity for him to say, my alarm didn't go off, or I got a flat tire, or whatever. Understood. Do you understand the expectation? Yes, ma'am, I should be here at 8. And often that's all the further it has to go, is to reinforce that expectation. And then I would also inquire about the skills. Do you have an alarm clock that will function? If it continues, then we talk about, again, confirming those expectations and skills. If that behavior continues, we move up to verbal counseling. Once you get beyond verbal counseling, up into written counseling, UIFs, that's an Air Forceism for unfavorable information file, that goes into their permanent record, Article 15s, 32s, and courts martial. Once you get into those areas that I've circled, that's where your JAGs can help you a tremendous amount. Doing this properly is incredibly important because we are messing with people's lives. And so if you are going to start taking more strong steps against your member, you need to make sure that it is done well and correctly. I have my two JAGs on speed dial, and I consult them every single time that I'm going to serve paperwork. If you do not have this book bookmarked on your computer, you need it. This is the Air Force version. There are also Army and Navy versions. This is the military commander and the law. It is literally written for commanders to go through every bit of the range of punishments that we have available to us. So that's going to go on your bookshelf as well. And finally, let's talk about growth. Growth is the opportunity when you've given that expectation, you've given the feedback, whether it's good or bad, you've given consequences, and now you sit back to see what happens. And sometimes it takes a while for this to happen. So remember I told you that my individual with the alcohol problem, that was the first drill that I was in command. So that was 2 years ago. He ended up leaving the military about 5 months ago and came to me on his last drill. And he said, ma'am, can I have a minute of your time? I said, of course. And he said, I really want to thank you. No one had ever spoken to me the way that you did, and no one had ever taken the time and cared enough to talk to me about my alcohol problem. I got into treatment. My marriage, back when you had talked to me, was falling apart, and we are back together now, and we just bought a house. I was about to lose my job because of my drinking, and no one had ever said anything to me. Now that my alcohol is under control, my job is safe, we're buying a house, and my marriage is coming back together. Thank you for talking to me the way that I needed to. That is the end result of the hard work that we do. Don't forget that in the leadership chair, your influence, your words have a tremendous amount of power. And you may not see it right away, but you'll see it eventually. So into your toolkit goes that five-step leadership model. And then the last thing we're going to talk about very quickly are meetings. Meetings are going to be a necessary evil of your job as a leader. And so learning how to make them suck just a little bit less is worth your investment in time. So we're going to talk very quickly about what do you have to do as a meeting organizer. We're going to talk about why are we having a meeting, and then how to make a good meeting. So first of all, as a meeting organizer, your first job is to be good stewards of people's time. How many people have realized how many meetings this year can be solved with a really well-written email, right? We don't need to get together near as often as we do. So if you can give the information that you need without actually gathering people, please do so. Your job is also to connect members together and to why they're coming to the meeting. You have to protect them from each other, and then you equalize them. So in a good meeting, there's going to be discussion and disagreement and collaboration. If there is an imbalance of power in the two people that you are pulling together, it is your job as the organizer to make sure that they start out on an even footing so that it doesn't just become one person dictating to another. It helps me think about four different types of meetings that you can have. One of them is a briefing. We're pretty familiar with those in the military. An organizational meeting is an opportunity to go across functional areas and to check in. So we had a lot of these during my vaccination activation. We did one every single day. And we'd talk about, hey, what's happening in clinical? What's happening in logistics that's going to impact the clinical? This is the opportunity to work across those barriers and to make sure that somebody takes accountability rather than just saying, hey, that guy's in charge or that logistics is going to take that, making sure that somebody is accountable for what you think is going to happen. Perfect example. My vaccination team was going to be at a remote facility and administering shots. We talked through how to get the logistics there. I had all the personnel there. We had the vaccines coming. And I asked, did anybody get the keys to the building so that we could get in? There was dead silence. We made sure that somebody took accountability for that so that we could actually get in and vaccinate. A third type, is capacity building. So this is the sort of thing that we would do once a week with our vaccination. How many vaccines are coming? What do we need to staff for? Do we need to change our staffing model? What are we looking at in the next several weeks? And then a strategic meeting. These are usually into like the C-suite level. This is who's changing the focus for your entire organization. Where are we headed with that? And these are much less frequent, usually once or twice a year. GSASEP just did one, and we have reorganized and refocused on what our goals for the next coming years are. Now, thinking about the meeting itself, there are a few ways to make a meeting less terrible. First of all, I love this Freakonomics Radio podcast that talks about meetings and how to make them less awful, and so a lot of this is pulled from that. Before the meeting, make sure that you have a why as to why you're having this meeting. Why are you asking all of these people to come together? Invite people, but also allow them to not come. Say, hey, I'm having a meeting. Here's the topic that we're going to talk about. If you have input on these topics, feel free to email me. You're also welcome to come, but I'm happy to send you the meeting minutes afterward. And if at any point down the road you feel like you need to be there, you're more than welcome. How awesome is that? To be invited to a meeting, but if you don't have anything important there, to not go, but to know that you'll still understand what's happening afterwards. I challenge you to make your meeting agenda. So we've all seen those agendas, right? New business, old business. Instead of having it that way, make your agenda items questions to be answered, because that's what a meeting should be. It should be collaboration and decision-making. And be very strict with the time limit. Things will expand to take the time that you set. So if you set a 30-minute meeting, it will take 30 minutes. You set an hour and a half meeting, it will take an hour and a half. Be respectful of people's time. During the meeting, start out with 10 minutes to connect your people. So there's actually some interesting research on this that says if you start out with an icebreaker, and you can Google all different types of icebreakers, but something that allows people to express a negative thought you will actually get better interactions and better conversation later on in your meeting. So an easy way to do that is, what was one good thing that happened today and what was one bad thing that happened? Giving permission to say bad things actually encourages people to bring up negative or contradictory ideas to what's being offered in the meeting. Give it a shot. Respect that time limit. And at the end, take a few minutes to wrap up. Say, these are the things that we covered. These were the answers that we came up with. These are the do outs. And this is the accountability that we have going forward. And then after the meeting, you send out those minutes and the deliverables that are need to come back for that next meeting. I was so excited by this email. I just had to share it because this is one of my bosses at St. Charles. And it was such a beautiful email. The agenda questions, not agenda items. Look at that. What do we value and what do patients value? And then he illustrated what the deliverable from that should look like. Isn't this beautiful? He also up top said, I want an hour, and put a few people that could come if they wanted to, but not necessary. What a beautiful email. This is how you do that. And again, that Freakonomics Radio podcast is going to go onto your bookshelf, How to Make Meetings Less Terrible. And that's that last item going into your toolkit. That's that meeting plan and your commander's bookshelf. And that brings us to the end of our time together. We talked about this, that five-step leadership model. We talked about how to have difficult conversations. When you have to drop the hammer, how do you do that right? And then finally, we talked a little bit about how to make meetings less terrible.
GSASEP is proud to be the premier continuing medical education source for military and federal emergency physicians. To purchase CME for the episode you just listened to, please click on the link in the show notes. The Government Services Chapter of the American College of Emergency Physicians promotes quality emergency care and enhances the development of emergency physicians who serve our nation from training through retirement. Learn more about our chapter at www.gsacep.org.